From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Extreme violence brings extreme loss. That loss is palpable in the grieving hearts of Israeli and Palestinian parents who have lost their children to war. Over 1,000 people have been killed in the last 18 months of bloodshed alone. Each of the dead was someone's child. The parents of these lost children could have surrendered themselves to agony and anger, and many have. They could have become the standard bearers for more violence, and some have. But others, on both sides, have chosen to work for reconciliation. They've turned their children's memory into a spur for peace. Tonight, we're talking with four such parents, members of the Families Forum, two Israeli parents and two Palestinian parents brought together by the shared tragedy of the deaths of their children. And the question is, can hope be focused through the lens of loss? Might the real path to Mideast peace wind from home to home, from family to bereaved family? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I wish you could see our studio tonight. We have four parents with us and an interpreter. Our Palestinian guests tonight are Fatma Batnij and Abdal Jalil Abu Rayan. Welcome and good evening. They don't speak English, but we'll have interpretation from Bashar Zaitun, and thank you for coming, Bashar Zaitun. Our Israeli parents tonight, Roni Hirshenzon and Nurit Elhanan Peled. Welcome to you all, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Nurit, maybe you can tell us, just to set the stage, about the group or groups to which you all four belong and what you have in common.
The group is called the Parents Circle for Peace, Palestinian and Israeli Parents for Peace. And we came here to convey a message of parenthood that transcends nationalities, religions, languages. We want to have a common and a shared voice that says that the death of a child, any child, is the death of the whole world, and that the whole world should be concerned about the death of children.
And the thing that you all very sadly have in common is that each of you has lost a child in this terrible conflict.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yes.
And
yes.
All the members, the families who belong to Parents Circle, share this, whether they're Israeli or Palestinian.
Yes, they're all bereaved families.
How many Israeli families now belong to the group, and how many Palestinian families?
It's about 250 Israeli families and 180 Palestinian families.
Mm-hmm. We want to use this evening to talk with all of you about the unique perspective that you bring to this. Just by joining in this organization, you've been brave, you've stepped up. We don't want to be maudlin, but we do want to understand how the tragedies in each of your family's lives have brought you to this point. Bashar Zaitun, our good interpreter, if you'd be good enough, let's turn, if we could, first to Fatma Batnij. May we ask her, what was the tragedy in her family's life that brought the loss of a child, and how did she go from that loss to learning about and joining this group of Palestinian and Israeli bereaved parents?
Sayyida Fatma, is it tell her to tell me, shall you say ma'aki, on the basis that you have only a son, and shall the experience that you have had that you belong to this group? الأباء والأمهات الفلسطينيين والإسرائيليين.
أول إشي لما فقدت ابني أنا حبيت أبحث عن السلام، أسأل عن أهل السلام، عرفت عن الإخوة في المجموعة اللي هي من إسرائيل ومن الناصرة، الأخ إبراهيم بشناق من الناصرة والأخ زحاق من إسرائيل، هذولا برضه كمان فقدوا أبنائهم.
when I lost my son, I decided I wanted to do something about this. And that's when I learned about this group of Israeli and Palestinian families and parents who have lost family members.
From my notes, I see that Fatma Batnija's son, Yusuf Ali Suleiman Abu Awad, says here, was shot in the head at point-blank range at an Israeli checkpoint next to his village while he was in a stationary car, that he was a digger operator. I assume that means a heavy equipment operator. I want to ask Fatma Batnij, is her membership in this group, does it indicate forgiveness, or is it simply focused on finding peace, or both?
نحن نعرف أنك فقدت ابنك أنه أصيب بطلقة ابنك يوسف في الرأس. بنحب نسأل اشتراكك في هذه المجموعة هل الهدف منه العفو أم والسبب الآخر هو البحث عن السلام؟
مش إن العفو إن ما يتكررش هذا الحرب ما نفقدش أبنائنا وإحنا مع بعضنا ماشيين جرح واحد وألم واحد وبنتمنى إن اللي يعني إحنا صار إن ما يصير للآخرين سواء في الشعب الإسرائيلي أو في الفلسطين.
It is important for us to not have a repetition of this loss of our children and family members. My goal in joining this group is because we share the same pain and we share the same future, and it's important for Palestinians and Israelis to work together towards that mutual future.
We'll come back to the question of peace and forgiveness, but that was translated for us by Bashar Zaitoun. That was Fatma Batnij, who lives in Bet Umar, if I pronounce that correctly, on the West Bank. Ronnie Herzenson, let me turn to you. Could you share the story with us of the loss that came to your family as a result of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
January 95, it was a suicide bomber in a place near Netanya that killed my son and with him 21 Israeli soldiers and civilians.
1995.
It was in 1995, January 95. But in the, before 18 months, they start this intifada, I lost my other son, Elad.
How?
Elad was the best friend of David Biri. David Biri was a soldier in the Israeli army and got killed by the Hamas in an ambush in place near Gaza. Elad couldn't suffer the loss of his brother and his best friend. 3 weeks later, he commits suicide.
These stories are almost too terrible to hear. Ronnie Herzenson, when did you join the parent circle after the death of your first son, after the suicide of your second son?
I joined it right after the death of my first son. And me going visit the grave of my oldest son, I've been seeing the rows of the graves getting longer and longer each day, and I always come out of the thought, what's going to be happen? Who is the next one that is empty place of the grave is waiting for him? I never thought it would be me again, but unfortunately, that's what happened. Well, I lost my two sons. I didn't lose my head. And I put all my efforts to try to reach a peace because I know that people are dying in the Middle East, being killed, because we didn't reach the peace.
When your friends, when your extended family, your neighbors come to understand that you're part of this group, a group shared by both Palestinians and Israelis, a group looking for peace, do they understand, given the loss your family has suffered, do they understand why you've responded in this way?
Some understand, some don't understand, but I don't care. I think this is the truth. The only way to bring peace is not by increased violence. Violence brings only violence. We must break this circle, and the only way is by push the politicians to the negotiation table.
We're talking tonight in an unusual, extraordinary for us hour with four parents of young people who have died in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Two Israeli parents, two Palestinian parents, all of whom have joined a group that's looking for peace, that's looking past retaliation and recrimination and looking for peace so that more children don't die. Nurit, your story?
My little girl was killed by a suicide bomber in Jerusalem.
She was an Israeli Jewish. What year did this happen?
It happened in 1997.
How did it happen?
Just like that. She went downtown to buy some school books. It was just the beginning of school, the 4th of September. And there were two bombers there, two suicide bombers there, and they both took five little girls.
How did you learn the news?
Oh, a friend of my son's called me and said that he saw her going into this walk downtown, and there was an explosion. And next thing, I saw her on a stretcher in the CNN.
And was it an immediate response to think of peace, or did you first think of revenge?
My views haven't changed because of this. The only thing that have changed is that people are interested in my views ever since.
You're daughter of an Israeli general.
I'm a daughter of Mati Peled, who was an Israeli general. And when he was an Israeli general, 56, he was the governor of Gaza after the war of 66, mm-hmm. 56. Mm-hmm. And he realized then that the people in Gaza are not Egyptians. And he had an idea to let them have autonomy and use them as bridge of peace to the Arab world. Mm-hmm. The army and the government, of course, did not accept that. He left the army and he studied Arabic and Arabic literature, and he became later a professor for Arabic literature. And he devoted the last 30 years of his life to peace. He was one of the greatest fighters for peace. As for revenge, I don't think that the dichotomy of forgiveness versus revenge is right. Mm-hmm. I don't think there is forgiveness. You don't forgive. But we have a very strong line by a poet named Bialik, who said that even Satan has not yet invented the revenge for the blood of a child. Mm. And this is not because Satan has no means. Mm-hmm. It's because after the death of a child, the only thing that you want to do is to protect the child. And since you cannot protect your own child, you want to protect all other children. I don't think that any mother would be satisfied to see any other mother's child dead. So there's no forgiveness, but there is no revenge. The only thing that drives me is this forever unsatisfied need to protect my child and any other child.
Your child, and now every child that could meet such a fate. You don't forgive, says Nurit Elanan Peled, but the care, the love of a parent who has lost his or her child goes out to all children, and I guess that's what's driving all four of our guests tonight. Two Israeli parents, two Palestinian parents, all of whom have lost their children in the Israeli-Palestinian battle. It's a crowded studio tonight. It's a studio full of history and full of a message. We want your response. What do you think? Can the way to peace be found in the wisdom of the grieving? Do those who have suffered loss bring more clarity to this conflict? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Today, in Israel, a Palestinian suicide bomber killed 7 people on a bus in northern Israel. It was an attack on a rush hour bus from Tel Aviv to Nazareth. The attack was claimed by the Islamic Jihad, condemned by the Palestinian Authority. It was the most lethal incident since U.S. Envoy Anthony Zini arrived on Thursday to try and end 18 months of bloodshed. Remarkable in a way only because it's the first such attack since Zini arrived, but of course the attacks have gone on, attacks and counterattacks, month after month and year after year, and the numbers now reaching almost 1,500 in this latest intifada, in the latest 18 months of open conflict that's reached such a crescendo in recent weeks. It's an enormous number, but those losses are suffered family by family, and 4 parents are with us this evening who have suffered that loss in their own family and decided not to take it to war or to revenge, but to take it to an effort for peace. We're joined by 2 Israeli parents and 2 Palestinian parents this evening. Our Palestinian parents do not speak English, but we're happy to have the interpreting expertise of Bashar Zeitoun. We're going to use that in just a moment. Listeners, can you understand how the loss of a child would bring a parent to make peace, not war? Is that an obvious response to you, or an unthinkable one? And can Israel and the Palestinians make peace before every family has lost a child? You can join this extraordinary conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to turn to the Palestinian father with us now. Abdul Jalil Abu Riyan, thank you for being with us. My notes tell me that your son, Mohammed, died at age 16 in November of the year 2000 when an Israeli soldier shot him in the face. May we ask, what were the circumstances of that killing? What was going on?
سيد عبد الجليل ممكن تحدثنا عن الظروف اللي تسببت في قتل ابنك في ديسمبر
كان ضمن مجموعة من الأطفال وكان دخل الجيش عليهم فاستفزهم فقام بعض الأطفال برشهم بالحجارة
My son was with a group of friends and they were provoked by the army so they picked up stones started throwing stones at the army occupation forces
وكانت يعني لحظة سهل ما بدوا يضربوا كان طخينه
And at that moment, a shot hit my son.
كان رصاصة واحدة في وجهه وقاتل.
It was only one bullet that hit him in the face, and he died immediately.
Does he know what the provocation of the army was to these young Palestinians?
تعرف إيش سبب الاستفزاز اللي حصل في هذه الحادثة من الجيش الإسرائيلي؟
دخل على البلد.
إيش اسم البلد؟
الحلحول.
The Israeli army entered into the town of Halhul, where I live, and that's why that started.
We know how bitterly many Palestinians resent the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. What do his neighbors think of him when they learn that he's joined a peace group together with Israeli parents?
نحن نعرف أن الشعب الفلسطيني يقاوم الاحتلال الإسرائيلي ماذا كان شعور الناس الفلسطينيين عندما علموا أنك قررت أن تشترك في هذه المجموعة مع الآباء الإسرائيليين والفلسطينيين
لحد الآن أنا جيت يعني بطريقة عفوية ما حداش بيعلم وأنا يعني مصمم أنه لأنه فيش فيها إشي لأنه الهدف سامي والهدف السلام ما حدا ضد السلام يعني
I believe that this group has very high goals, very lofty goals. I did not hesitate one moment to join this group and did not hesitate in believing in those high goals, that this is what I should do right now.
I want to say to each parent in this room, and I'm dropping my impartiality here, but I'm just staggered by the grace of this effort, this reaching for peace that all of you have embraced. And I guess I only wish and hope that that I would be as large-hearted as you if ever faced such terrible circumstances. And still, the tone of political leadership on both sides in this conflict is really not in sync with what you're saying. There are still harsh words coming from both sides. Do you think that the effort of parents like you can bring a change in tone to the relationship of Israelis and Palestinians? Roni.
Well, I don't believe that one person, even if he is a leader, can change the situation. Only the situations can bring us the right leader. If we are the people, we'll try to be a movement and let everybody lead, hear our voice, and the voice of the pain and the voice of the mothers and the fathers is the basic voice that everybody can attach to. So I think this is the way to solve the conflict.
Bashir Zaitin, would you ask Fatma Batnish, the Palestinian mother who lost her son, what does she think is the answer? What's the solution that can lead to peace for the Palestinians and Israelis? What needs to happen?
Sayyida Fatma, شو بتفكري الحل لهذه المشكلة حتى نصل إلى حل سلمي بين الشعبين الفلسطيني والإسرائيلي؟
والشيء الانسحاب الجيش من المناطق. الانسحاب الكامل والشامل.
The first thing I would say is for complete withdrawal of the occupation from the West Bank and Gaza, completely and immediately.
حتى يكون هناك فيش مشاكل من الطرفين.
So that we can prevent any conflict between the two sides.
Roni, I see you responding to this. Is there agreement in this group about the solution or not?
Well, I agree with every word she said, but as a group, we are not politicians. We are not in a place to tell the politician what the right way to solve the problem. Specific answer for every question. We are trying to say only major thing that only the way of talking, the way back to negotiations, is the way to peace. Because we, as a person, I have answer for any question you will ask me. Mm-hmm. But it's not my job to answer these questions.
Mm-hmm. And yet, these are questions that have to be answered. We're talking with four parents of children who have died in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And sharing with us tonight their unique view on this conflict. All of these are parents who have reached through any desire for revenge to reach first for peace. It's an extraordinary response to the most terrible loss a parent can suffer. You can join this conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Can bereaved parents somehow show us the way? And I guess the bigger question is, can national grief be turned to peace, not war? Ellen is on the line. Welcome, Ellen. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I've been following this conflict, so-called, for 25 years. I used to write about it from Israel and the West Bank. First to the lady whose father was Matty Pellet. He was one of the most wonderful people I ever met. I once met him. I interviewed him. He wasn't the Israeli voice for peace. I so appreciate, Tom, you're having these people on the air. They are really the true heroes, and their stories are so moving that I'm driving down Route 93. It's bringing tears to my eyes.
Mine too, Ellen.
Only through bringing the stories of the human beings within this conflict, and it's so good that you have two Palestinian parents as well, because the faces and the lives of Palestinian people under occupation is never presented in the media. the American public needs education about this, and the best way for them to become educated is to meet ordinary folks who are suffering, and the best kind of people are these people who do not want revenge and who do not want further hatred or further war. It's a wonderful program.
Ellen, thank you so much for your call and your read. We acknowledge the compliment there to your father from, it sounds like, a journalist who knew him. Let me ask you, if I may, what the response to your group has been in the United States on this visit. I know you're making stops in a number of places. Only this evening you've talked with a group here in Boston at Trinity Church, I think. What are you hearing when you sit and tell your stories from Jewish Americans, from Palestinian Americans? How are they responding?
So far it was amazingly positive. We had two big meetings in temples where Christians, Jews, and Muslims were gathered. Mm-hmm. And in each one of them, we had only one person who was against us or said nasty things against us. Most of the audience was very very much in favor. And that was surprising, but very moving and very heartwarming.
I'm sure it is. And what about, Ronnie makes the point that you are not politicians, and he says it's not your job to come up with a solution. But we know that there are political leaders on both sides in this conflict who have taken a very strident approach, who say without any hesitation that the only way to win is to win through violence. And they're surely not alone in that. There are also civilians, ordinary people on both sides who share that view. When you run into Israeli hardliners, and I'll put this to the Palestinians as well, what do Israeli hardliners who believe the only proper face is a super tough face make of your position, having lost a child?
Well, they say all kinds of things, but I don't think it really matters, because what you said now fits in to our notion of what the two sides are. Because for us, the two sides are not the Israelis versus the Palestinians. The two sides are those who want to wage war against those who want peace. And the politicians of both sides who are so eager to kill, for me, they are on one side. They're not adversaries. They're very good friends who are playing bloody games with our children's lives. And one of the messages that we want to convey is that the voice of parents must be raised about all other voices and say to these politicians, enough, because they put such a high price on every word they utter, but they don't put any price for bullets and for killing. And one of the things we want to do is to tell them, no more. You don't have our children anymore.
And Abdul Jalil Aburian, what do you say to Palestinians who are filled with anger and who want to kill Israelis? And we see it again only today. It happens, and we know there's a lot of encouragement of this on both sides. What do you say to the angry young men in the West Bank and Gaza when you hear their anger? What's your message to the angry young Palestinian man?
ماذا تحب أن تقول إلى الشباب الفلسطينيين أو المجموعة من الشعب الفلسطيني الذين ينادون يمتلئون بالشعور بالغضب على الاحتلال والذين على حسب قولي يشجعوا بأعمال العنف ماذا تحب أن تقول إليهم؟
يعني هذولا مبرر غضبهم لأنه كثر ما بيشوفوا من الدم والعنف وعلى التلفزيون ووسائل الإعلام من الذبح والقتل حتى من الطرفين. يعني أي إنسان يصير يشوف أي دم في الشارع سواء إسرائيلي مش إسرائيلي حتى من في أي محل في الدنيا بصير هذا شو اسمه وهذا الشعور.
When these Palestinians are subjected to this level of violence because of the occupation, and when they see the destruction around them and their powerlessness, a feeling overcomes them.
بحكم إنهم شباب صغار بيستطيعوش يتحكموا بعقلهم كثير فذا غضبهم ممكن يستمر وهذا سببه الوضع الحالي.
So these young people, because of the situation they're living in, their anger is built up with time because of the occupation on their homes, and they're overcome by that feeling of anger.
And yet, he stands for peace. What is there any message that he can give them that's strong enough to break through their anger? What does he say to them?
وعلى الرغم من الذي ذكرته يوجد فلسطينيين زيك وزي السيدة فاطمة الذين يريدون أن يبعثوا برسالة سلام فماذا تحب أن تقول إليهم؟
لأنهم في عمري أو سني ممكن يكونوا عقلانيين وأن يستعملوا عقولهم قبل أن تكون ردة فعلهم فورية.
If these young men were at my age and if they were parents, they would think twice about what they are doing, and they would not want to subject their children to this environment.
Mm-hmm. So again, think of the children. We're talking with four parents, two Israeli, two Palestinian, who have lost children, all really horribly lost children. There's no good way to lose a child, but these are lost in a conflict that has become merciless. Your calls are welcome. Tenny's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome, Tenny. You're on the air.
Thank you. As someone who runs a nonviolence institute in Providence, and I'm a former peace camp activist in Israel and a soldier, I'm reminded by the courage of these parents how often we forget it takes actually a lot of courage to wage peace. Mm-hmm. We often think how we need courage to wage war. And, you know, it's much easier for the cameras to get the attention of the sole gunmen or the tank. We forget the first intifada started with a lot of nonviolence activists on the Palestinian side. It started with a very big peace camp on the Israeli side. Mm-hmm. And really the question that I've been asking myself now for a while, did the Oslo Agreement make things so bad, like the economy on the Palestinian side and slicing the territory into different slices, that people thought that really violence will deliver more, and we need to restore the balance for both of us, that we can really deliver through peace. I think I always felt there are parents on both sides that are not going for this. The Palestinians and Israelis I always worked with did not believe in this. And actually the sad part that after almost 2 years of the new intifada, we're going to go back and the final settlement is going to be very close to Taba, where we started. That's in a way the wasteful side. We think this is not like the United States and the Taliban, where you have an overwhelming force of B-52s going against Kalashnikov. These are two peoples living next to each other, and really the solution, we're going to both be living next to each other, and the lines are pretty clear where it should end.
And yet it hasn't ended. And as you know, Tenny, having been an Israeli soldier, it's house to house, and it is merciless. Tenny, thank you for your call. Nurit, well, I don't know what we say exactly in response to Tenny's call, except that it does seem that the general shape of a solution is almost obvious. Why hasn't it been grasped?
As Ronnie said before, we are not politicians, but it is up to the politician to wish it. That's what I think.
It's up to the politicians to wish it, and we can only hope they listen to our guest tonight. Do these parents see more clearly than their national leaders? You can join our conversation, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It's an extraordinary hour we're spending right now. Our studio is full of parents of grief. Each of these parents has lost a child to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And of hope, because each of these parents has stood up through that grief to stand up for peace. We have two Israeli parents joining us, two Palestinian parents. You're welcome as well. John is on the line. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I can barely understand the amount of grief that these parents have shared, and I can only think to what I hear in the news from time to time, which must only make them feel that it's marginalized their great loss. As I hear about Arafat not being allowed to travel, I mean, these are the petty issues that somehow the Middle East gets bogged down in, and I quite frankly don't understand them. I mean, we have so many people, and so good this program has humanized this tragedy in terms of real people and real names and sons and daughters. It's just so sad. I feel so much for these parents. I wish somebody could explain to me why any of this matters, whatever these people are doing on both sides that makes it worth all this.
John, thank you for your call. We know that, and of course you know as well, that it matters to these parents because it's affected their families so intimately. And John is asking, why can't we get past these issues? I don't know if there's an answer to that, but Roni, what do you think? Do you see hope in the midst of all the fighting that's going on?
I must see hope. I must see hope because I have three daughters and six grandchildren. The hope is to them to live in a decent way and not to be afraid to get killed in the streets. And this is, I have to believe that is the way. And the way, as I much understand, is not by react to violence by violence, only by sitting together and solve the problem that can be solved.
Nurit, what can Americans do?
I think that Americans and Europeans have a long experience of, first of all, of democracy. Americans, I think, realize the power of public opinion. Americans know how to get organized for an issue and get it through to people. All these things are quite missing in Israel, I think. I think people in Israel don't realize that democracy does not mean to give power every 4 years to somebody else to do what he wants, but democracy means to be involved and to influence. Also, I think that Americans and Europeans can help us understand the meaning of true dialogue between different ethnic groups, different cultures.
Fatma Badnish, do you believe that you'll see peace between Israel and the Palestinians in your lifetime?
هل تعتقدين أنه راح تحصلين أو راح تشوفي سلام بين الشعبين الإسرائيلي والفلسطيني في حياتك؟
أمل ضعيف. إذا زي ما حكيت لك إذا بكون هناك انسحاب من جميع المناطق تخف المشاكل وبصير الحياة أهون بخف الحرب بخف العنف إذا في انسحاب في أمل.
My hope is weak right now. However, if there is an end to the occupation, that will give the Palestinians and will give me hope that we can avoid future conflict and future fighting between the two peoples. It's only by ending occupation will there be real hope.
Nurit Elhanan Peled, how do you remember your daughter?
How do I remember her?
Is there a picture? Is there one moment? Is there a day?
No, it's every minute, every second. You don't remember, you live with it. It's not that you have lost. I really don't like the expression to lose a child because I don't think we lost our children. We have dead children now. And this is one thing that goes with you all the time.
We send with you in all those memories and the life you live our hopes for peace, and we thank each and every one of you for joining us tonight. Abdul Jalil Aburian, thank you. Fatma Bachnich, thank you. Roni Herzenzahn, thank you for being with us. And Nurit Elhanan Peled, thank you very much for sharing your story. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
It's just 4 days now until Hollywood's big night, and we continue our series looking at the nominees in some of the Academy Awards' biggest categories for 2001. So far, we've gone through the marquee names of Best Actor and Actress nominees. Tonight, we look at some of the year's best performances by supporting actresses and actors. We're joined by our on-point movie maven, Garen Daly, to sift through this year's nominees. Welcome, Garen Daly.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Garen, some of the biggest roles this year are up for supporting Oscars. What's going on?
You know, there's actually a little word out in Hollywood. Now they're calling it the Marsha Gay Harden effect.
Okay.
And what that is that actors who are in a big role in a film get knocked down into the best supporting role in the hopes that they're going to get an Oscar. Marsha Gay Harden won an Oscar last year for Pollock. She was actually on screen more than anybody else in that film. She should have been up for Best Actress, but she went into the Best Supporting Actress role.
So they're going for the gold with the supporting nomination.
Yeah, and it's true this year. We've got a number of different actors who and actresses who should have been in the Best Supporting Actress, but they moved down into that, hoping to get the gold.
What's the trend over time in this category? Have we seen this growing up over time, bigger roles in the supporting category?
Yeah, we have seen it going. And it's interesting, the transition seems to have been is that in the Best Supporting Actress thing, we see a lot of young, pretty women getting the roles. Marsha Gay Harden is a very attractive woman. Anna Paquin has won in the past. Tatum O'Neill has won in the past. A lot of younger actors seem to win in the Best Supporting Actress. And in the Best Supporting Actor, it seems to be a little on the older side.
Let's talk about the five actresses up this year for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah, we've got Marissa Tomei in The Bedroom, where she plays a young woman who has an affair with a younger man. We have Jennifer Connelly playing John Nash's wife in A Beautiful Mind. Maggie Smith, who plays a low-rent member of royalty trying to make good in a household on the weekend. Helen Mirren plays a stern housekeeper. Both of those women are in Gosford Park. And Kate Winslet stars as a young Iris Murdoch in Iris.
So boil it down a bit. Who do you think is going to be going neck and neck here?
You know, I'm actually feeling that this is going to be between Jennifer Connelly in A Beautiful Mind and Maggie Smith in Gosford Park.
Jennifer Connelly has come a long way to this role. I remember her from years ago as Cheesecake in The Rocketeer, a kind of a kid's film. Here she is playing an all-grown-up wife of The Beautiful Mind himself.
She has really worked on her craft and has done a very good job. She was excellent in a film called Requiem of a Dream, where she played a junkie. And in this film, she plays John Nash's wife, who really loves him and really works with him.
I went to Wheeler.
Good.
There is no William Barch.
I've been working for.
Doing what? Breaking codes? Dropping packages in a secret mailbox for the government to pick up?
How could you know that?
Saul followed you. He thought it was harmless. They've never been opened. It isn't real. There is no conspiracy, John. There is no William Barcher. It's in your mind. You understand? Baby? You're sick.
Jennifer Connelly in Beautiful Mind, and you think she'll be up against, essentially in this race, Maggie Smith in a very different film, Gosford Park.
Yeah, in Gosford Park, Maggie Smith, who's been up for an Oscar six times and won twice for California Suite and Prime of Miss Jean Brody. I think that her comic turn as Lady Constance and Robert Altman's very sly satire is going to resonate with the older constituency that is the Academy. It's one of the oldest constituents. It's a very conservative constituency, and when it gets down to voting, I think that they're going to be torn between the two of them.
What's the essence of her performance in Gosford Park?
Well, she plays a woman who is basically your poor country cousin who has a good lineage, and she's hungry all the time, and she's dying for food, and she just wants to be waited on hand and foot.
I'm starving. Where have you been?
Sorry.
Oh, they always send up a good breakfast here. I'll say that for Sylvia. She's not at all mean in that way. No, just bought marmalade. Dear me, I call that very feeble. Well, I suppose one can't have everything. Mary, I don't think I'll wear that shirt. After all, the other one's warmer. That's all I care about. Ooh, yummy. Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Maggie Smith in Gosford Park. So how do you finally call it, Jennifer Connelly?
Yeah,
Maggie Smith?
I'm going Jennifer Connelly. I think this is going to be A Beautiful Mind. kind of night. And I actually think that Jennifer Connelly is the best performance in that.
Gary, let's jump to the other side of the gender line. Nominees for Best Supporting Actor.
Well, you know, we've got a really nice selection of really good actors in here. You got Ian McKellen playing Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. You have Ethan Hawke playing the rookie narcotics officer against Denzel Washington in Training Day. You have Jim Broadbent playing John Bailey, Iris Murdoch's husband and Iris. John Voight playing Howard Cosell and Ali. Wonderful turn by him. And then a very dynamic role from Ben Kingsley playing Don Logan, a really nasty, foul-mouthed English gangster and Sexy Beast.
If you've got to pick a couple that you think are the contenders here, who would they be?
I think I'm going to go with Ian McKellen, who won the Screen Actors Guild Award, and Ben Kingsley, because it's such a powerful and dynamic performance that he puts on.
Sexy Beast was well-received, but not a blockbuster at the box office. What's it about?
It's about a retired gangster on the Spanish coast, has an old friend show up, and he wants to do one last big score, and then he's going to be free. But Don Logan, Ben Kingsley, comes and tells him he's got to do another one.
I won't let you be happy. Why should I?
Friday at the Grosvenor, you'll be there.
I won't.
You will. I told you, said you're doing it. Don't you show me up.
No, I won't be there.
You will. You're Mr. Roundtree.
No, Don.
Yes, Roundtree.
No.
Yes, Grosvenor.
No, Don.
Friday.
I won't be there.
You will.
No, Don.
Yes, 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 yes.
This is Ben Kingsley, Mahatma Gandhi?
Yes, yes, yes.
He sounds fierce. I'm scared.
He bullies people throughout this film, and it's an amazing performance at how he's able to pull it off. And if you're not used to the Cockney accents, you might have a little trouble picking it up, but again, a real strong performance.
Very different from Ian McKellen with the Wizard of Wizards, Gandalf.
Gandalf. Lord of the Rings, a masterfully done film, and he plays Gandalf the Wizard, who is helping Frodo return the ring, the evil ring, to the mountain where it's going to be destroyed.
Hold out your hand, Frodo. It's quite cool. What can you see? Can you see anything?
Nothing. There's nothing. Wait. There are markings. It's some form of elvish. I can't read it.
There are few who can. The language is that of Mordor, which I will not utter here.
Mordor?
In the common tongue, it says one ring to rule them all. One ring to find them. One ring to bring them all, and in the darkness, fight.
Garen Daly, I've got no problem with Lord of the Rings, and Gandalf is clearly the man in Tolkien's world, but Best Supporting Actress for playing a wizard, is this got a legacy behind it? Is there a tradition of giving it to a role like that?
Well, you know, there's not so much a tradition of giving it to a role like that. There is a tradition, or there seems to be a growing tradition, of giving it to older, more established actors. Michael Caine in Cider House Rules was an example. But, you know, Ian McKellen asked to be put into this category. New Line Cinema, which is distributing the film, wanted to get him in the Best Actor. He wanted to come down to this category because he felt this was an ensemble piece. And I think that he's actually going to win the Oscar this year, and not just because of this role, but I think for last year's Gods and Monsters and the fact that a lot of the Academy members saw him in the X-Men and liked him in the X-Men.
So there's a little bit of lifetime achievement in here perhaps as well.
I think so.
And you're going with Ian McKellen.
I think so, yeah.
Well,
I'm very confident. This is the most confident character category I have.
All right. Sunday night, we're going to remember. Garen Daly, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Garen Daly is a movie reviewer and critic, the owner of the Dedham Community Theater in Dedham, Massachusetts, and On Point's movie maven. To read more of Garen Daly's Oscar previews and predictions, go to our website at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're funded by